The trading floor is closed. It's time to cut through the chatter and find the clarity. From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk After the Bell. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Is everything okay?
No.
Why not?
Here's the problem with these mouses. Mice?
The meese.
Mouse?
Meese.
The meese.
Yes.
You know, the little wireless ones?
Yeah.
Well, I got two different computers at my desk.
Yeah.
One's a Macintosh.
Yeah.
And one is whatever the black ones are.
Yeah. And you grabbed the wrong...
I grabbed the wrong one.
You grabbed the wrong moose.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, go ahead, go get it. You got time. There's nothing big going on. Hey, welcome to AgriTalk After the Bell, everybody. I am your host, Chip Flory. Dollar, a little change late in the session there. Crude was higher. Stocks were sharply higher today.
I got it.
Okay, good. Corn was higher today. Soybeans slightly lower today, but... we'll talk about how the soybean market traded here in just a little bit. Soybean meal was higher, but it had that high range open and a low range close, similar to what we saw in soybeans. Bean oil, get this, bean oil was higher too, but it had a low range open and a high range close, so just the opposite of what we saw in soybeans and soybean meal. Some unwinding of spreads in there. I got to believe that's what's going on. Winter wheat futures saw solid gains. Spring wheat was lower. Live cattle and feeder cattle were lower. Lean hogs, moderate to sharp losses in the lean hog market today. Brian Grady's going to be coming in. And just a programming note real quick. Got a little travel time coming up again. Heading out to Anaheim, California,
right,
for the Commodity Classic. Looking forward to being out there, seeing everybody, shaking some new hands. Should be a great trip out there to the Commodity Classic.
I'm glad you said shaking hands.
So we're going to be... I'm going to be taking off halfway through today's show so that I can go catch a plane. Davis and Brian will take you through the end of the show. Carrie Artak coming up at the end of the show today as well with an update on some. You know, it when Carrie started doing these, start of the year, something like that, he was putting numbers out there in soybeans that I was thinking to myself, there is no way that we're going to be there in those. Here we are.
Here we are. We're there.
We're there.
Yeah.
We're to those numbers that he was saying, listen, we just need a little bit of a help, some help in here, and we could see some 1040, 1050 old crop soybean prices. Well, we're there.
Yep.
We're there. So we'll get an update on where Kerry thinks we are headed next and what these markets have to do to perform even better going forward.
Great.
All right, buddy, tell me what was moving the markets today.
Well, Chip, the U.S. dollar index opened slightly higher and just under resistance at 90 even in the spot month contract before retreating to test support at 89.50. But by the time the grain markets were wrapping up, the dollar had retraced those losses and was trading very near steady on the day.
Yeah, volatility came back into the stock market, which brought some volatility back into the currency trade, which encouraged some profit taking from the long side of commodities. And beans probably felt some pressure from that, while corn and wheat prices, they may have actually gained some support from that volatility increase in stocks and currencies.
Well, wheat export inspections in the weekend at February 22nd did nothing to help support wheat prices today. Shipments totaled just 280,000 metric tons, which was below trade expectations. Winter wheat futures were supported by still dry conditions over most of the hard red winter wheat belt and ahead of this week's updates on winter wheat crop conditions.
You know, there's some talk about the crop conditions in hard red country falling from the end of January. Yeah, I don't know if that's going to happen. I'd be surprised if that happens, not because conditions have improved greatly, but because conditions already stunk at the end of January, and I don't know if there was a lot of downside risk on those crop conditions from where they were at the end of last month.
Well, May hard red futures were 8¾ cents higher, but 4.93½. March soft red jumped 8½ cents to 4.72¾. March spring wheat was off 4¾ to 5.96 even. Corn prices were supported early in the session by spillover support from wheat and soybean price gains. That support was replaced by USDA's report that U.S. exporters shipped more than 1.3 million tons of corn. That's in the weekend of February 22nd, which was a new marketing year high, Chip.
Yeah.
USDA this morning also announced the sale of 125,000 metric tons of U.S. corn for delivery to an unknown destination in the current marketing year. On the supply side, ongoing drought conditions in Argentina and planting delays in Brazil provided support for corn prices.
You know, I think the last 4 or 5 weeks of export demand, may have been some catch-up buying by the importers out there.
Mm.
Okay? You know, they just kind of hesitated, really didn't extend their coverage. Well, they got their coverage current, at least. All right? What's happening now, that could be some concern over the supplies coming out of Argentina and Brazil. That, if that's the case, it could open up another leg up for demand over the next few weeks, which should help support prices too.
Well, March corn futures were 2.25 cents higher, but 368.5. July corn gained 2.75 cents to close at 385 even. December corn closed at 399, up 1.75 cents on the day. China is back and buying some U.S. beans. USDA this morning announced the sale of 132,000 metric tons of U.S. beans to that country for delivery in the current marketing year. In the weekend of February 22nd, USDA reported bean shipments of nearly 762,000 metric tons that lined up with lackluster trade expectations. Still, traders know there is risk China may retaliate against the U.S. for trade policy moves, including some sanctions on North Korea.
Yeah, this is an interesting connection here, and Brian probably knows more about this than what I do. The North Korean connection here, I believe, is that China is supplying North Korea with some key commodities, mostly energies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And even China is calling the latest sanctions by the U.S. on North Korea. I can't remember the exact word that they used, but they're saying that the U.S. overreached on this one, mm-hmm. and they went just a little bit too far. Throw that on top of the other issues, and gosh, I can't believe I'm saying this, but it feels like this trade tiff with China is real. It really does.
Well, drought in Argentina continues and is expected to continue through at least the end of the week. That helps support U.S. soybean and bean meal prices in early trade today. Technically, May bean futures gapped to a new contract high on the open, tested resistance at 1060, where it ran into aggressive profit-taking, turning prices slightly lower near midday.
Yeah, and May beans ended slightly lower on session lows. It sure didn't do, I don't know if it did damage to the chart picture today, but you know what it was? It was a lost opportunity for the bean market to attract another round of spec buying with a prettier close in here. But you know, when you make that move up to a contract high, November beans made a move to a new contract high today as well. So, yeah. I mean, there is some impressive movement going on in this market. We just missed an opportunity for some follow through today.
Well, March soybean futures were 2 cents lower at 10.34 1/4. July beans slipped 0.75 cents to close at 10.55 1/4. November beans closed at 10.30 1/2. That's up 2.5 cents on the day. On the livestock side, a negative reaction to Friday's cattle on feed report kept the pressure on live cattle futures to start the week. April live cattle were 85 cents lower at 124 even. June cattle were down 60 cents at 116.20. March feeders were 45 cents lower at 145.55.
You know, the key there is kept the pressure on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I don't know how negative that cattle on feed report was. Yes, the placements were heavier than expected. But it's not like we were double digits,
right,
like we have been in recent months.
Yeah. So it's like 3.5 points, right?
Right.
Above expectations?
Yeah. So
something like that?
Yeah, a little negative, but let's not get carried away there.
Right. Soft cash hog bids weighed on lean hog futures, with the front month contract erasing most of last week's gains. April lean hogs were $1.42 1/2 lower at $69.95, and June hogs fell 72.5 cents to close at $82.30 today, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis.
You bet.
We got a lot to talk about on today's show, and I'm going to get the conversation started with Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady, and then bottom of the hour I'm going to take off, head for Anaheim. Davis is going to finish up the show, and of course we've got Kerry Artak coming up in the final segment on a Monday. All right, we've got Brian Grady coming up next on AgriTalk ATB.
Tired of yesterday's missed weeds becoming today's big problem? Get rid of missed weeds for good with Liberty, the herbicide that puts an end to missed weeds, guaranteed. Plus, Liberty is proven effective on tough-to-control and resistant grasses and broadleaf weeds. So choose Liberty, the simply better solution for superior weed control. Backed by the Liberty Weed Control Guarantee. Talk to your retailer to learn how you can qualify for the Liberty Guarantee. Always read and follow label directions.
What makes SO4 the smart sulfur source? Superior solubility for delivering sulfur and calcium when the plant needs it, throughout the entire growing season. Other sulfur sources release too quickly or too slowly, failing to meet the crop's full needs. SO4 is also pH neutral, so it won't acidify the soil like those other sulfur sources. As you can see, SO4 is the smart sulfur source. Talk to your agronomist or learn more at calciumproducts.com.
What do you think, sweets? Should I wear this dress or the green dress tonight? Oh, really? You thought the green one looked better? This is the green dress, I swear.
Your Farm Dog USA assistant won't be able to help your wife make intelligent fashion decisions, but he will be able to help around the farm by picking up drop tools, managing your herd, and opening latch gates. Learn more at farmdog.org. That's PHARMdog.org.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Where do you turn to protect your bottom line? It's time you turn to ProFarmer for easy-to-follow market news and advice for both cash marketers and futures and options users. Visit tryprofarmer.com today for a no-obligation four-week trial to the nation's number one marketing newsletter. That's tryprofarmer.com. ProFarmer is not a brokerage firm, so you're not going to get a lot of in-and-out trading advice or elaborate option strategies. You will get rock-solid fundamental market outlook and recommendations that farmers have relied on for generations. Stop sifting through mountains of confusing analysis. ProFarmer selects only the most important news to save you time and keep you focused on what really matters. Make better informed marketing decisions to protect your bottom line. Try the ProFarmer newsletter absolutely free. Visit tryprofarmer.com. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Market Rally is brought to you by the Liberty Link System, the simply better solution for a stronger yield and superior weed control from Bayer.
And welcome back to AgriTalk After the Bell, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Dollar little change late in the session today. Crude was higher. Stocks were sharply higher. When I say that, I mean the Dow was up like 350 points, something like that. Corn was higher. Soybeans were slightly lower with a high range open, low range close. Soybean meal was higher, but it also had that high range open and low range close. Bean oil was higher, but it had a low range open and a high range close. So a lot of different price movement going on in the soy complex today. It tells me that, I don't know, Beej, there was probably some money moving around between the products, wasn't there?
I think so. When you look at it, looks like corrective trade. The beans, we unwound those bull spreads, and those have been a hallmark on the price rally here. So that's probably your first indication. One of the other takeaways, we saw meal climb today, oil climb today, and then those nearby bean contracts were lower. So the crush spread actually improved,
right,
which gives more encouragement to crush more soybeans, which means that we need more demand for meal and oil to keep the products from backing up. So, you know, I think when we look at all this, it's driven by Argentine weather, no right. doubt about that. What we know about weather rallies in the past is that, you know, they typically overdo themselves. Yeah. So as long as we continue to feed bullish news in here with lower crop estimates and negative or unfavorable weather reports, I think there's more upside. But we do have to be careful in here that knowing okay. that it's going to be overdone at some point in time. And once it's overdone and it starts to pull back, it's probably going to be pretty swift on the pullback.
Yeah, that is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer editor here in Cedar Falls. Winter wheat futures saw solid gains today. Spring wheat was lower. Live cattle, feeder cattle lower. Lean hogs posted moderate to sharp losses today. Brian, you said once we've got it all factored in, you know, it's easy to look back and say, well, that's when they had it all factored in. How do we, I mean, is there more yield risk, more production risk from Argentina that needs to be built into prices?
Well, you look back a week ago and they were talking about, you know, 50 million tons being a cap for the soybean crop down there. Well, now we're talking about maybe 40 million metric tons being the target. So
right.
that 10 million metric tons just like overnight almost evaporated. And so that's where we're headed. I think at some point we will get to the point where estimates get too low. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, 40 million tons is probably a little bit too low at this point in time.
Feels like it.
Yes, maybe mid-40s, somewhere in there, with the potential to go into the low 40s. But if we start to see some of those private estimates come out and they are 40, 41, 42 million tons, say, I think at this stage that's probably a little bit overdone, and that's when maybe the market does put in its top.
Okay, so the narrative all season long has been, yeah, we're losing bushels out of Argentina, but we're replacing them with more bushels out of Brazil. Are we still doing that?
I don't think so. I think that what we've lost in Argentina is more than what we will gain in Brazil this year. And the reason I say that is we grew a record bean crop in Brazil last year, right? 114 million tons. Let's say that some of those estimates out of Brazil right now and some of the private consultants there are now upwards of that 117. Yeah. So you've added 3 million tons. We've lost way more than 3 million tons in Argentina versus last year at this point in time. So we aren't replacing bushel for bushel or ton for ton or however you want to phrase it.
Yeah, to put that in perspective, what, at the start of the season, we were looking for about 57 million tons of beans out of Argentina?
Right. So if you're talking low 40s, I mean, you're looking at, let's just say, a
15
million ton reduction, and you gain 3 in Brazil, it is not bushel for bushel, right? Ton for ton,
right? And like you explained earlier, this is a soybean meal issue as much as it is a bean issue, and we've been putting incentive into the U.S. market, into the Argentine market, the Brazilian market, the Chinese crushers. Those margins have been improving as well, but the incentive here is really for the U.S. crusher to ramp it up, get it up to capacity, and replace some of that soybean meal that's being lost out of Argentina, right?
Yeah, I think definitely. And like I talked about to start off with, the crush spreads are on fire right now. We've also, you know, and I've mentioned this in the past, that's the one thing that we're going to be watching is when those crush margins start to soften. Mm-hmm. And come off of their, you know, incredible run that they're on right now, that's probably one of the first signs that the rally's running out of steam.
Yeah, so we need to pay real close attention to that. But on days when you've got bean prices steady a touch lower and meal and oil prices higher, you got to anticipate that we're going to keep any impact on next week's supply and demand report. Are we going to see that crush number go up for the U.S.?
Well, we are above where USDA is, 10 million bushels right now.
Yeah,
So I think that we feel like that it will, whether or not it's next week or next month or whatever the case, but we feel USDA is a little too light with their crush estimate right now.
Right. Okay, last week's export sales report had a net sales reduction on old crop beans. And then we see China in the market today, about 132,000 metric tons of old crop beans. Could we see China, some of the other traditional importers, whether it be a product out of Argentina or beans out of Brazil, get a little concerned about total South American supplies and backload for the first time in for however long, but backload their demand for U.S. beans?
I think that they are concerned, or need to be at least, because, you know, Brazil isn't, like we've talked about, they aren't replacing every bushel that's lost in Argentina right now. And, you know, we still, even though our market share was down in 2017, the 2017 calendar year, the U.S. still provided about a third of China's imports on soybeans. So that isn't going to go away. I mean, they still have to get their beans from somewhere. We know that their appetite is while the percentage gain year over year isn't rising anymore, it's kind of leveled off a little bit, the total consumption or what they need from imports is still rising.
Yeah.
And climbing closer to 100 million tons.
Right. Okay, so the 2018-19 marketing year, we could be bumping up against 100 million tons of bean demand total out of China. And then we've got all this trade tiff talk that's going on and the potential retaliation by China against the U.S., including on some soybeans. I got to call BS on that.
Yeah, I think it's probably a scare tactic on China's part. And when you break it down, they probably can't do a whole lot on soybeans. They still need it. And this has been our stance for a while. We had a story on it in last week's Pro Farmer newsletter that was backed up. Our stance was backed up by some of the Chinese source.
Yeah.
But it probably would hurt China, Chinese crushers and the Chinese farmers more than it would hurt the United States. Because if China cuts us off on bean demand, we would find a new home for our soybeans or the bulk of them.
Yeah.
Not saying that every bushel would be replaced, but we would find a home for the bulk of them. And that's been the trend over the past decade anyway. Our market share in China has been going down, and the rest of the world has been picking up, and our overall demand is still up. So, you know, it's kind of been that shift anyway, where China's getting more soybeans out of South America, less from the United States, but the United States is shipping more to the rest of the world.
Right. So step one, if China does decide that they're going to retaliate against the U.S., step one is to buy every bushel of beans that they can buy out of Brazil.
I would think so. I mean, I can only imagine at that point in time that they would be extremely nervous, and they being the Chinese importers.
Yeah, and they wouldn't care what price they had to pay.
Probably not, because they need the soybeans.
They wouldn't.
And you know, if you're looking at the situation where it might be a higher price down the road, or any kind of fear that they wouldn't be able to get the supplies, you're going to buy them and buy them as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Now, I'm not going to ask you to put a number on how much upside potential there is, but I'm just going to assume that we think that there is still some upside potential in bean prices. How do you go about marketing into this?
Well, you have to sell any kind of crop scare rally.
We're contract highs.
Yes. Well, and especially when the crop scare is outside of the United States.
Yeah.
So I'm a big believer in that if it's here, then you can afford to be a little bit more patient, but you got to stay on top of it when the crop scare is coming somewhere outside of the borders of the United States. And obviously it's Argentina right now that is the fuel here. So do I think there's more upside? Yes, I do. How much more do I think? I don't know, but I think that we will know in the price action very quickly, in terms of, you know, it's probably going to be a sharp run up with a major pullback.
Yep. Okay. Well, we've been talking about South America, China. When we come back, Davis, continue this conversation with Brian, but the first thing that you guys need to discuss are these rains in Brazil. I mean, as long as it stays hot and dry in Argentina, that pattern is locked in place, and it's funneling those rains right up into central Brazil, where they are trying to harvest that crop. So number one, when we come back, is will that start to impact the concern level over supplies, quality, timing of beans out of Brazil? And number two, they should be planting that Safrinha corn crop. What are the delays going to do to the markets? That's next on ATB.
The Climate Field View platform gives you the digital tools to uncover data-driven insights so you can make better farm management decisions and get the most out of every acre. To learn what Climate Field View can do for your operation, contact your local dealer or visit climate.com for more information. Climate Field View services provide estimates or recommendations and do not guarantee results. More information at www.climate.com/disclaimers.
Oh, Ed, see the headlines?
Yep. Credenz soybeans are designed using smart genetics.
Look, state-of-the-art breeding advances the best germplasm.
Plus, tailored varieties for any field conditions with choice in herbicide-tolerant traits.
And Credenz soybeans come backed by Bayer's ongoing innovation.
Want increased yields and ROI? Plant the smarter soybean.
Talk to an authorized Credenz retailer or discover the right Credenz variety at credenz.bayer.us.
Always read and follow label instructions.
Time now for After the Bells Tech Talk. Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught joins us now. Dano, what's the market move that matters the most today, buddy?
Hey, Davis, I'm looking at May corn futures today. After falling from a July 2017 high at $4.30 per bushel to a January 12th low of $3.53¾, May corn futures have since worked higher. The rally has been well behaved, with the May future topping 40-day moving average resistance decisively on January 24th. and pushing above extended trend line resistance drawn across the fall highs on February 6th. However, while it has continued rising lately, its associated relative strength index has been slipping. Such divergences often signal a looming price reversal. Nevertheless, May Corn rallied again today and posted its best close since early last September. If its RSI also moves to fresh short-term highs, that suggests a potential for a bullish follow-through.
Outstanding. Thanks, Dan. Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught. Pro Farmer members get daily advice updates at ProFarmer.com.
So, Mr. Wolf, is it? Are you absolutely sure you want to take your money out of this strategic financial portfolio and put it all into dog toys?
Your Farm Dog USA assistant won't be able to make savvy financial decisions for you, but he will be able to help around the farm by picking up drop tools, managing your herd, and opening latch gates. Learn more at pharmdog.org.
Are you paying too much for fuel and fertilizer? Verify you're getting the best price with Inputs Monitor from Farm Journal Media. Knowing the low, average, and high price quotes from dealers in your area for fertilizers and farm fuels can save you thousands of dollars. Inputs Monitor gives you an easy, anonymous method to compare fertilizer and fuel prices from across the Midwest. Plus, get grower-focused buying advice, local pricing charts, industry news, and purchase alerts so you don't miss any critical buying opportunities. Visit InputsMonitor.com for subscription information. That's InputsMonitor.com. Unbiased and farmer-focused, Inputs Monitor is the newest and best tool to help growers buy inputs at exactly the right time. Before you book your next fertilizer or fuel contract, verify you're getting a fair price with Inputs Monitor. Learn more at InputsMonitor.com. That's InputsMonitor.com.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Expert analysis from the CME floor and experts across the country. This is AgriTalk After the Bell with Chip Flory.
Well, the big red phone rang and Chip sprang, and he's off to Anaheim, everybody. I know he's looking forward to seeing those of you who can make it out there. In the meantime, your pal Davis Michelson here at the helm. Before we get back to the conversation with Brian Grady, the Brinestein, let me give you a quick market recap. May hard red winter wheat futures were 8¾ cents higher today at 493.5. May SRW wheat was up 8.5 cents to 472¾. July corn gained 2¾ cents to close at 385 even, and new crop corn closed at 399, up 1¾ cents on the day. July beans slipped 0.75 cents to close at 1055¼. Novi beans closed at 1030.5, up 2.5 cents on the day. April live cattle 85 cents lower at 124 even. March feeders 45 cents lower at 145.55, and April lean hogs were $1.42½ lower at 69.95. There's your quick market recap. And Brian, I do want to talk about the cattle on feed numbers from Friday, but before we do that, let's, like Chip said, just continue our conversation here a little bit. We're talking weather markets down in South America. From 1 year to the next, you know, it seems like there's an awful lot of attention being paid to that. There's a drought. There's rain here. There's not enough rain there. What's the big difference in that Argentine story this year from other years, if any?
Well, in years, recent years, when we've had drought issues down in Argentina, one of the things that we've seen is that their ending stocks are much tighter than what they have this year. So they still have leftover supply from last year that's carried over that will help them to compensate somewhat for the lost tonnage down there this year. I think that that's a major issue when it comes to the price discovery here in terms of how high can we go. And Chip had asked me that very briefly before we ended that last segment. So I do think that there's more upside, but the ending stocks will cap it probably much sooner or sooner than what it would have in a year if ending stocks were tight.
Would they necessarily more aggressively crush to try and then pull back that that overhang?
Those old crop supplies. Argentina is a product exporter.
Okay.
I mean, more than a raw soybean exporter. Okay. So they export products.
So they would have been grinding them anyway,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, they just have more left over versus what they have in previous drought years here recently.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Is that the same deal for RG corn as well?
To some extent it is. It's a bigger story, I think, in soybeans than what it is in corn. The story in corn, in my opinion, out of Argentina is that crop has been hurt more than what the soybean crop has to date. Mm. And it comes with the production cycles. So the early planted corn pollinated in very poor conditions, hot, dry conditions. It's filling in hot and dry conditions. Huh. The later planted corn now faces some struggles moving forward if they don't get significant rains very soon. And as a result, the corn crop, and we all know that corn doesn't respond nearly as well as soybeans. Once it goes, it has to go, and it can't start and stop like the soybean crop can. So I think that late-season rains could still help some of the soybean crop. Every day that we go without rains now is just more damage to the corn crop. But yet we've seen the corn market respond minimally compared to what the soybean market has. So that's probably the biggest story out of Argentina, in my opinion, is that while we've seen the funds cover their short position and move long in the corn market, which is unbelievable almost unto itself, the soybean market has been much more price responsive.
Okay. Weather pattern seems like it's really dictating, though, a whole lot of this. You know, the corn crop has had an uphill climb in Argentina, as you said. You know, what it seems to be what's keeping us dry in parts of Argentina is also the same thing that's keeping us wet in certain portions of Brazil. There's talking about, you know, supply quality, all sorts of potential difficulties with the Brazilian crop. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I don't think that's a market factor yet. It's been excessively wet through some of these areas. I mean, some of them have gotten incredible amounts of rain through central Brazil. It's slowing down the soybean harvest. There's no doubt about that. And the slower the soybean harvest, the more delayed the Safrinha corn planting is, or the second crop corn planting down there. So it's a market issue. Quality, you know, there's always talk about quality concerns whenever there's late season rains in Brazil. It hasn't become enough of a concern yet where it's a market factor, in my opinion. I think that this is almost all exclusively driven by Argentina at this point with the weather and crop scares. So if we do get some of that, there's a chance that that would give us a boost late in the their growing season and potentially add to some of the exports here from the United States on the soybeans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Implications for the Safrinha corn crop, of course. And if we're talking maybe Argentina's corn crop has been battling uphill. And now if we're talking maybe a late planted Safrinha crop, or what could these rains do to potentially impact that?
The risk is the later you plant the second crop corn down there, sooner it runs out of the rainy season and into the dry season. And, if the pattern remains wet all the way through, I don't think they have an issue. It was just delayed in getting planted, and it'll have plenty of moisture. The seed's going to go in the ground when it eventually gets planted with plenty of moisture, obviously.
Right.
But the concern is that it shuts off, the rainy season shuts off, and now it's going to be pollinating and filling during the dry season. And that's the risk in planting that crop late. And keep in mind, about 70% of this year's total Brazilian corn crop is going to be Safrinha acreage. There's significant risk, I think, to the Brazilian corn crop as a whole. So, you know, maybe the story when I talked about it, you know, not really the corn market not responding, maybe it would if we have the Argentine concerns that have given us the support that they have to date, and then the Brazil concerns come in later on down the road, and, you know, maybe that's the boost where the corn market kind of catches up on a price relationship with soybeans and how it's factored in the South American losses.
It seems like, and I know you're not an agronomist or whatever, but it seems like, you know, Brazil has had a pretty decent rainy kind of season, or there's been plenty of rain at least in the last couple of weeks down there. I wonder do you have any indication what's going on in the subsoil there with the subsoil moisture? If they should encounter some late season dryness on that second crop corn, would there be maybe enough deep down below, if they can get the roots down there, to help them weather that storm a little bit.
You know, whenever you get the type of rains that they've had, there's topsoil, there's subsoil, it's excessive. The difference between Argentina, which has very good moisture holding capabilities in their soils, mm-hmm. is Brazil doesn't. Mm-hmm. So in those areas where they've had excessive rains, yes, they should have plentiful rain. In areas where they've had lighter rains here, that, you know, then it becomes a concern.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Talking with Brian Grady from Pro Farmer today on ATB. Let's move it here to home just really quick. You said this all this stuff that we've just talked about really isn't having that much of a market impact just yet. I'm a farmer in Iowa, let's say, Illinois, you know, anywhere within the listening audience here. What is there anything that they need to be taking away from that conversation as far as making acreage decisions, as far as, you know, how they're going to proceed into this upcoming planting season? You know, we're coming to the end of February.
Yeah, you know, looking at acreage, and we'll know more here at the end of March, mm-hmm. because USDA will give us its first benchmark with the prospective plantings estimates. But, you know, the projections out from the Outlook Forum last week, 90 million acres planted to corn, 90 million acres projected planted to soybeans.
Dead even.
Yeah, I think that they're probably a little bit heavy on the corn and maybe light on the soybeans. Probably, if I had to pick one of the two and say, you know, I think I'll be right on this one, it's right. That the soybean acres will be light at 90 million, mm-hmm. Just based on the price performance that we've seen and the price ratios for new crop November soybeans versus December corn futures. So I think we will put more focus on the acreage moving forward, especially once the calendar flips to March, mm-hmm. you know, the end of this week. And that'll be another factor to keep in mind, something that may keep the soybean market from reaching extreme levels, mm-hmm. you know, where we're at right now. Many people didn't think we would see these prices anyway.
Right.
So, you know, you're kind of looking at a situation where, I said it earlier on in the conversation with Chip, you need to feed this bull market a consistent dose of bullish news to keep it going.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, as promised, let's do flip to the livestock side. Friday, got a cattle on feed report from USDA. Cattle on feed on Feb 1 up 8%. Marketings in January up 6%. Placements in January a bit above expectations at a 4% increase from year ago. A lot of talk, a lot of focus on that placements figure. Is that really where the nugget is at in that report?
Yeah, and keep in mind the drought footprint in the Southern Plains continues to expand and worsen. And as long as that's the case, you're going to see animals moving off of pasture. There's wheat that can't be grazed because of the poor condition. The grasslands, so the pastures are you know, pretty much being, you know, consumed at this point. So you're going to see more animals move into feedlots. I guess it, while it surprised the market, it shouldn't be overwhelmingly surprising that we did place more animals on feed in mm-hmm. January than what was anticipated.
That being the case, they're placed on feed rather than having maybe a little bit of extra time out on mm-hmm. you know, out to graze. Does that mean that they spend extra time then in the feedlot there before they go off and get marketed? Does that have some impact on the supply chain at all?
Well, it will. I mean, that's something to keep in mind. Watch those weight numbers. Now, the lightweight, the under 600 pounders, you know, that they weren't up. The increase was in the 6, 7s, and 8s weights, and so yeah, it's something to watch. But if you do see a lot of those lighter weight animals, then going into feedlots, then it is a number of days on feed until they get to market ready weight, mm-hmm. and so that can have an impact on the marketings.
Okay, Brian Grady from Pro Farmer, we certainly appreciate you being here with us today. Well, when I say us, me and Chip.
The departed Chip.
Right,
yeah,
right.
My pleasure, Dave. Yeah. Always good to talk to you.
Good to hear from you. We've got Kerry Artek coming up in the final segment of ATB. Stick around. Don't miss it, people. Are you paying too much for fuel and fertilizer? verify you're getting the best price with Inputs Monitor from Farm Journal Media. Knowing the low, average, and high price quotes from dealers in your area for fertilizers and farm fuels can save you thousands of dollars. Inputs Monitor gives you an easy, anonymous method to compare fertilizer and fuel prices from across the Midwest. Plus, get grower-focused buying advice, local pricing charts, industry news, and purchase alerts so you don't miss any critical buying opportunities. Visit InputsMonitor.com for subscription information. That's InputsMonitor.com. Unbiased and farmer-focused, Inputs Monitor is the newest and best tool to help growers buy inputs at exactly the right time. Before you book your next fertilizer or fuel contract, verify you're getting a fair price with Inputs Monitor. Learn more at InputsMonitor.com. That's InputsMonitor.com.
Where do you turn to protect your bottom line? It's time you turn to ProFarmer for easy-to-follow market news and advice for both cash marketers and futures and options users. Visit TryProFarmer.com today for a no-obligation 4-week trial to the nation's number one marketing newsletter. That's TryProFarmer.com. ProFarmer is not a brokerage firm, so you're not going to get a lot of in-and-out trading advice or elaborate option strategies. You will get rock-solid fundamental market outlook and recommendations that farmers have relied on for generations. Stop sifting through mountains of confusing analysis. ProFarmer selects only the most important news to save you time and keep you focused on what really matters. Make better informed marketing decisions to protect your bottom line. Try the ProFarmer newsletter absolutely free. Visit TryProFarmer.com. That's TryProFarmer.com.
The mighty Prosaro, king of fungicides. Its fast action and long residual make it the keeper of grain quality and yield, the hammer of head and leaf diseases, the number one reducer of scab. When your goal is greater wheat quality and higher yield, use Prosaro fungicide, and the crown of higher profit will be yours. Learn more at prosaro.us. Always read and follow label instructions.
Find it now at shopfarmjournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at shopfarmjournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at shopfarmjournal.com.
What is the Corvus Zone? It's the weed-free area between the rows. But only when you use Corvus, the one corn herbicide that delivers three levels of grass and broadleaf weed defense. Burn down, residual, and reactivation with rain. You want season-long control of the toughest weeds, including resistant ones? Use Corvus Pre-Emergence Corn Herbicide, America's preferred choice. Corvus is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Top Third Ag Marketing puts the farmer first with a marketing plan that manages risk in every market condition. We protect the downside, and we're more than just about puts. We'll use a strategy based on the current market conditions and your circumstances. Make your plan today. Let Top Third help.
Top Third Ag Marketing, farmer first with a plan for every market. Call us at 877-TT-HEDGE today. That's 877-TT-HEDGE. Futures trading involves the substantial risk of loss.
Roots. They're your crop's foundation. Your success depends on them. Your roots can make or break you each season. Take charge of your roots this season with Radiate from Crop Production Services, designed to give your crop a stronger, more robust foundation for yield and quality. Radiate can make all the difference for your crop this season. Ask your CPS dealer about Radiate or go to RadiateGiveBack.com for more information. Always read and follow label directions.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.
You know how to grow a great crop. We're here to help you grow profit. Now, back to AgriTalk After the Bell with Chip Flory.
Welcome back to AgriTalk ATB. Alpha Tango Bravo, Davis Michelson here filling in for Chip, who just put on his walking boots. He said they were made for walking, and that's exactly what they did. I'm here to get us through the rest of the show here. Chip will join us back again tomorrow. In the meantime, I've got, as we do on Mondays, Carrie Artek here from Artek Advisory. And let me just remind you, in case you've forgotten from last week or haven't heard, you can go to artekadvisory.com for a free two-week trial from Carrie. That's artacadvisory.com for a two-week free trial. Carrie Artek, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good, David. Yourself?
I'm hanging right in there. It's good to hear from you. Today, if we can hit, I don't know, the dollar, probably better hit corn, soybeans, and wheat too. Why don't you go ahead and take it away and tell us what you're looking at this week, Carrie?
Okay, yeah, I'll finish up with the dollar because it's important right now. But let me, as your listeners are probably well aware, if they've been listening every Monday, they know that several weeks ago, actually, in late January, I had longer-term buy signals in both corn and wheat. Now, we're talking May contracts now across the board, including the beans. And in fact, May beans last week on Friday posted a weekly settlement above a two-year channel top. So the soybeans are now sort of jumping into the bandwagon here on the bull side. Right now with May corn, 365 and a quarter, actually well below the market. That is our breakout resistance, now support, expecting 491 and three quarter into later March and early April. And over the next several months, 406 and three quarter. And that actually remains well intact right now. And I think the dollar is going to be playing a role perhaps in this, and I'll get to that in a moment. We'll jump to May wheat, well below the market. We've got good support at 440 and three quarter. Also, I think I mentioned in last week's show, if we could close last week above 460 half, then the market posts a secondary buy signal into later March. That did happen. And so we have a secondary buy signal in May wheat. I'm expecting 494 and three quarter over the next several weeks. And in fact, the 523 even, the 545 even region does remain a 2 to 3 month upside objective. On to May soybeans, 1029 and a quarter is our floor. Now, we're sort of just above that, if you will, at 1046 even. 1029 and a quarter is our floor through March, actually through April. I'm expecting 1097 and a quarter to the upside over the next 3 to 5 weeks, 1129 and three quarter over the next several months. Now, all of these signals could actually neutralize and turn south if, for instance, the U.S. dollar index. Now, this is the cash index, not the March futures. I've got a solid channel top this week at 90.38. We're trading in the 89.70s today. We got up into the 90 handle today. So 90.38 is our ceiling for the week. As long as we're below it, that long-term sell signal that I had last summer remains firmly intact, expecting bearish continuation into later March. That 87 and a quarter is the next 3 to 5 week target, in the next several months down into the 83.22 region. On the other hand, and this is important, if we close Friday above 90.38 in the U.S. dollar index, I think the dollar is going to rally for the next 3 to 5 weeks into the 93 handle. That will be at least neutral, if not bearish, for the grains, in my opinion. And so I'm just sort of throwing that out there as a little intermarket relationship there. The dollar, the correlation, the inverse correlation between the dollar and the grains gets sloppy at times, but it's been pretty tight the last 3 to 5 weeks. And so if we get a settlement Friday above 90.38 U.S. dollar index, look out. I think the grains will then correct to the downside, and I'll have those targets in next Monday's report.
Okay. Real quick. Now, Chip has a theory that if the dollar begins to look if the dollar takes on a sharply bullish tone, let's say, and attitudes begin to change, and it looks like it's headed higher, that might kind of creep out some of our global customers, and they'll think, geez, this sucker's going to go to, you know, fill in the number, but we better hurry up and get in here and get something booked before the dollar takes off on a tear on us. Is there a chance that that could happen?
Well, I think that could happen in the short term, perhaps the near term, several weeks out. But longer term, I can't see how that would play out on a longer term trend defining basis. Mm-hmm. Those who are on the edge, ready to pull the trigger on certain hedges and so forth, Yes. But overall, I think longer term it would have, if the dollar rallies, I do think at this stage, for the next 3 to 5 weeks out, the grains will weaken. But once again, these relationships are not, the correlation can get very sloppy, especially with the grains, as other elements, other variables impact it, you know, supply concerns, weather events, so forth and so on. So you have to be careful with the correlation.
Right. You mean stuff doesn't just happen exactly the same way each time?
No, it would be real easy if it did, but no, it doesn't. That's what makes it interesting, right?
If I can keep you for just another 30 seconds or so, what do you have any thoughts on crude oil? We're at 63 and change right now in the April contract. Same deal in the May. Do we keep going higher from here?
Yeah, you know, the dollar's weak. I do actually have a buy signal from a couple of weeks ago. I am expecting 67.80 to 68 and a quarter in the April contract. Wow. Over the next 2 to 3 weeks. That is an area the market can top out on a monthly basis. I am still in the midst of a long-term buy signal from early September, expecting upward continuation to 71.50, which is a moving target. It's a longer-term sort of a three-year channel top. That is my 2018 target, where I think the market can top out for the year. So that is the big picture. And all of that remains intact above 61 and a quarter this week in April crude.
Okay. Anything else you'll be watching as the week goes on this week, Kerry?
You know, I'm still bullish the feeder cattle, but live cattle, I might say, did come within 1% of a long-term resistance level last week. So we've got a kind of a conflict there, a contradiction in terms. Feeder mm-hmm. cattle stable, live cattle, actually, I'm getting increasingly bearish following the test of a long-term resistance last week. So I can talk more about, I'll make sure that next week we talk about feeder and live cattle both.
That's outstanding. Kerry Artek from Artek Advisory. Thanks so much for taking the time today, buddy.
Thanks for having me on, Davis.
You betcha. You betcha. All right. And now, without further ado, let's get to the tweet of the day. Today's tweets are brought to you by Love in Practice. When two people agree to join their lives together for the sake of love, there is reward, but there's also risk. Now, today's tweets at SLCC1. Been dealing with a cow here lately that's filled with hate and vitriol. Took her a tub of feed and her attitude changed completely. Dudes! You can apply this practice in other areas of your life, and just don't tell her where you learned it from a cow. At opening print, as one cornier said to the other, thank goodness for wheat. And one more from at Ty Home, a long time ago, before we had kids, my wife and I agreed, she takes blood, I get puke. Tonight I lost projectile right onto a vinyl floor. Come back for more ATB tomorrow when we got Chip Flory. Have a great day, everybody.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy 2 Save 3 are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.